because old age pensioners eat dog food, because single moms on welfare cry, because politicians steal our future, because women can't walk the streets safely, because I want to breathe fresh, clean air, because hope, freedom, and dignity are never on special at Walmart's, because capitalism is a scam.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Circle Day Show. As you hear this, it's broadcast on Resonance 104.4 FM. However, we are pre-recording the interview at the Guardian headquarters in King's Cross. The reason being, I fancy a change of scenery, and our interviewee, Rob Evans, is an author and reporter for the Guardian. Today we are going to be discussing his book, co-authored with Paul Lewis, called Undercover: The True Story of Britain's Secret Police. Very chilling stuff, I must say. Lovely to meet you, Rob.
Thank you very much.
Hello. And I must say as well that both me and Janie, who present the... who She presents the show, The Circle Day, once a month. You obviously will know that if you listen. And she's going to help me out with the interview, just so we can cover as much as possible and take advantage of our time here.
We briefly mentioned this at the beginning of the interview, but I found it completely fascinating that on the day of the 1993 demonstration against the BNP bookshop, there was apparently an undercover cop inside who had infiltrated Combat 18. Was it a conscious decision to focus on left-wing protest groups by yourself, or was it for some other reason?
In the book that we it's a flaw in the book, actually. I mean, the problem is that we're writing a book about a very secret area, and we can only really go where the evidence takes us. And as it happens, more evidence has come out about infiltration of left-wing groups than right-wing groups. And partly because, you know, activists who are on the left are willing to come and talk to us. So, I mean, it's undoubtedly the case that right-wing groups have been infiltrated with undercover officers. No doubt about that. And groups like Combat 18, you know, were penetrated. But we don't know that much about it because, you know, we don't know the identities of the undercover officers, and neither do the fascists come and speak to us. And also it must be, I mean, the other question is whether or not the fascists were sort of, you know, clued up enough to actually rumble the undercover cops.
Yeah.
Did you manage to see any police data on how successful these undercover deployments were? For example, how many arrests and prosecutions they resulted in, how much it cost?
To run? Mm. Yeah. This is a curious question because there's a difference between the undercover officers who are infiltrating what I would call serious crime, you know, drug runners, drug dealers, people, you know, smugglers, that type of thing, and the undercover officers who are infiltrating political groups. Since 1968, these have been largely two separate sets of undercover officers. And for example, there's two units that we write about. One is called the Special Demonstration Squad, set up in 1968, running until 2008. And if you're a member, if you're an undercover officer in this Special Demonstration Squad, you would have one fake persona and you would just go and infiltrate political groups. It's not like you could then be sort of just pulled off and, you know, go off and infiltrate drug dealers up in Newcastle. But there is a key difference between the two, which is that the undercover officers who are infiltrating political groups are there to gather intelligence. They're there to gather information about the groups, about the individuals in the group, and protests that they're planning, demonstrations that they're going on, so that that information could be passed back to their handlers, who would then pass it up the chain to whoever wants that information. And also the key thing that they're doing, they've got several aims, but the key thing that they're doing is that they're gathering information, the police are gathering information in order to control and stop, disrupt demonstrations that are going to be protests that are being planned. The difference between them and the undercover officers who infiltrate serious crime is that the undercover officers infiltrating serious crime are there to gather evidence, and they will know that they could go into court and have to give evidence and have to testify, albeit behind, you know, a screen. But the undercover officers in the who spied on political groups never did that, because the moment that happened, at any point in the last 40 years, people, the big secret would be out.
It would jeopardise.
Yeah, people would, the activists would suddenly realise, my God, they're going, the police are going so far as to infiltrate undercover officers. into our groups for, you know, long periods of time. So they were always there just to gather what they call intelligence, which is a rather grand word for information. So the point is that on the one hand, the police, it's very difficult to sort of get an analysis of what did they achieve. If you just say, if we could never really get to the heart of, you know, how many convictions flowed from the undercover work. For one thing, the police would say, well, we can't tell you because obviously that's all secret information. But on another hand, you've also got to understand that they weren't primarily there for that. So, you know, that's the point. I mean, the closest that you ever get to this is in the one report that was published on Mark Kennedy, in which they do give a sort of quite a little list of what he did and what he achieved. And I remember reading it and thinking it was not that impressive, that. But, you know, who knows what his actual, you know, full achievements were.
You mentioned briefly just then the SDS Special Demonstration Squad. And you said, did he say it got closed down in 2008? Mm. Do you know why that was and what the connection to the MPOIU, National Public Order Intelligence Unit, is and what their remit is?
Yeah, that's just, that's that is slightly unclear, all of that. I mean, I think that the easy way of looking at it is that the Special Demonstration Squad set up in 1968 was a Metropolitan Police unit. So it primarily focused on demonstrations in the capital, in London. So that ran, you know, normally they would have 10 undercover officers at any one time, spread out over, you know, the political spectrum. So you'd have some in, you know, left wing, some right wing, some in the animal rights. One group, incidentally, of activists that were almost always infiltrated were anarchists.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned it, perhaps because it's so obvious, but...
It's an honour.
It's an honour. I mean, one person who we know, Class War, who were big in the 80s and 90s, you know, had infiltrators. Certainly, I think at least two of them were Special Demonstration Squad had at least two operatives there. Probably more, I don't know. So in the 90s, the Labour government under Jack Straw, who was the Home Secretary, the second unit was set up and funded by the Labour government. Why that was is a bit unclear. I think why it was is that the second unit was doing the same thing, but they were a national squad. And, you know, in a sense, you could say, well, the clue is in the name, that yeah. It's a National Public Order Intelligence Unit. And they were there to go and investigate, to infiltrate groups across, you know, across Britain. And you can see this in a sense because Mark Kennedy was in Nottingham, Rod Richardson, the other, his suspected predecessor, was also in Nottingham. Lynn Watson, who was another undercover officer, was in sort of Leeds or, you know, Aldermaston Women's Campaign she was infiltrating, while Marco Jacobs was in Canada, Cardiff Cardiff Anarchist Network, I think it was called. But previous to that, he'd been in Brighton. So I think some of that, I mean, I think that in a way is a sort of useful way of looking at it.
The very last question from me is, what advice would you give to groups wanting to avoid infiltration?
The obvious answer is that they would themselves become more knowledgeable about how the police work and they could read up on what's out there already, and they might have a good answer for that.
What does it say about the democracy we live in? Given, you know, the undercover tactics showed that even the police are above the law.
Well, that's the question that the public have got to answer. Okay, fair really, enough. That I think the key question is that the heart of it really is: do the public really want this level of intrusion in political groups?
Okay.
And they may say yes. They may say no.
Yeah. Are there any psychological effects suffered by both undercover infiltrators and predictably those who were betrayed?
Yes. I mean, I think this is a very serious question, actually. I mean, we've touched a bit on the women, but we could talk for a long time about what's happened with the women. And they themselves are the ones who tell their story the best. But they have suffered enormous emotional trauma from, you know, from finding out that someone who was so close to them, these are people who are, you know, these are men who have, they've trusted, who have been their boyfriends, who have met their families, been to funerals with them, been on holiday. One wanted children with him. You know, one of them, Lambert, had a child with one of them. They've been, you know, devastated by this. And that, I think, is, you know, is, shouldn't be forgotten, really. I mean, what's the justification for that? Are the police, I mean, the police themselves do say that it's abhorrent that that undercover officers should form relationships, have formed relationships with these women. So, you know, there is a measure of an admission from the police that they've done something, that this has been wrong. So I think that's a key question, really. That is really a very important, it's very important. The other question, actually, is, which has had less attention, is the effect, the psychological effect on the undercover officers. And again, I think this is something that Peter Francis has sort of highlighted, is that if you're an undercover officer, when you go undercover for such a long period of time, you suffer a great stress, you suffer a lot of pressure. You've got it's twofold almost. You've got the pressure of constantly being on edge that you could be found out. But also you've got the confusion about, you know, who are you? Because a lot of these undercover officers have gone and infiltrated people and actually, you know, quite like them. And, you know, they're living two lives. They have a life with their real family where they go back one, you know, they used to go back one day a week. And then they've got their fake life, which they quite like, you know. I think one thing about Kennedy, so Kennedy loved his life undercover. He was having a whale of a
it's
time.
It's the ego, Freddy's
so
ego.
So much so he returned after he'd been...
That's undercover. Right, yeah.
Which well, that's his undoing.
Yes, it was, yeah. I mean, that's also another thing we shouldn't forget, is that it's primarily been men, that primarily the undercover officers have been men. And I do think that, you know, for young men in their, you know, 20s, they do love that sort of that James Bond feeling, yeah, of, you know, of the danger, the adrenaline, yeah, being undercover. Also the secret knowledge, you know, I know.
The universe.
It is that. Yeah. They're playing God. They love that. Yeah. They know stuff about people in the group, you know, that they've seen in the files, you know, and they think, oh, yeah, you're saying that, but I know this.
Yeah.
They love all of that.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of what's been going on. You know, someone like Bob Lambert, they love all of that intrigue. You know, that's what men like. I don't think I think women, you know, maybe it's a different question. But I just do want to say, last thing on this is that with the question, you know, you could criticise the undercovers for going undercover and doing what they did. But I do think that one thing that has happened that the police chiefs are also sort of culpable for is that they never really looked after the mental health of the undercovers, officers. And they didn't really pay attention to it. And they didn't have the proper processes and procedures in to look after, to make sure that they were, you know, that they were looked after. So I think that is a failing.
Mm, yeah. Last question.
Oh.
In the case of Bob Lambert, one of the most successful infiltrators, no one would have been none the wiser of his previous double life, was it not for his recent public appearances where he was recognised? Is there any procedure in place where the victims on the receiving end of the spying are told about who exactly among them is or had been an undercover? Or is that information and their identity still not going to be revealed in the not-too-distant future, like ever?
Yes, I mean, we should be absolutely clear that the police have a very... want to maintain a very resolute line that the undercover officers who went are not identified, even many years after they've finished their deployments. The police never want to identify any undercover officer ever in perpetuity. They say that they have a duty of care to the undercover officers, and that the undercover officer when they go undercover, they expect never to be named. So the names that have come out have mainly been because they have been unmasked by the activists themselves. And then, you know, say Bob Lambert was unmasked, and then he comes out and says, yes, I was an undercover officer, and is offered some measure of sort of, you know, he's made a statement about it anyway. The same with Mark Kennedy, sort of offered up some sort of, you know, statement on what he did. So the infiltrators, the activists who were infiltrated, have no right and will not be told who the infiltrators were. And this is also a very important question. I think it's come up very acutely in the issue about the parents of the dead children. And we've been approached by parents whose children have died at a very young age. And they have gone to the police and said, look, I'd just like to know, did you steal that child's identity? And the police say, sorry, we cannot tell you. Because if they start telling them, then if they say, yes, this was the identity we stole, then the activists, the police say, well, the activists will go and, you know, hunt down and find out the identity of that undercover officer. Mm. So what that means is that those parents will never know.
Mm. Well, that's it.
Good note to end on then.
Yeah.
We've had a very, very thorough grilling. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rob Evans, for your time. You've been listening to The Circle Day on Resonance 104.4 FM. Till next week, turn on, tune in and kick off.
Of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're dumping your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone. All alone. You watched in awe at the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July. While those fireworks were exploding, I was burning, that swinging my black flag high, eating the peanuts that the party friends have tossed you in the backseat of your father's new Ford. You believe in the ballot, you believe in reform. You have faith in the elephant and jackass. And to you, solidarity's a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, but you're a patriot. You thought I was only joking when I screamed kill Whitey at the top of my lungs, at the cops in their cars and the men in their suits. No, I won't take your hand and marry the state. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left